You are listening to Screenfish Radio. I'm your host, Steve Norton. In The Sound of Metal, Riz Ahmed plays Ruben, a heavy metal drummer who's left traumatized when he suddenly loses his hearing. Unable to perform and looking for answers, Ruben becomes a part of a deaf community that welcomes him in as he struggles with his new reality. This week, we welcome Catherine Erskine and first-time guest Deb Whalen to talk about what it means to be fixed, dealing with trauma, and the difference between silence and stillness. Welcome to the conversation. Welcome to Screenfish. Talking about the movie, should I just start us and then let us talk about the movie at this point?
Absolutely.
Because
that's way to ruin the flow, Steve.
That's what I was trying to do. I was trying to deliberately offset.
You want me to do the intro music for you? Do 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 do
do do do do. That totally slipped into Mario Brothers.
That's copyright infringement, dude. You know that.
Not the way she's saying it.
excuse me? You want me to make you start having to pay for this podcast? Welcome to Screenfish. I'm Steve Norton. Today we're talking to Deb Whalen and Catherine Erskine about the movie The Sound of Metal, or Price of Metal?
The Price of Metal is a very, very good.
First of all, I'm Steve Norton. And second of all, The Price of Metal, I mean...
You did lose something. There was a cost.
Super deep.
There's a reason you have me on these things.
That's it. Mic dropped. She may not have one.
I missed you.
She's like, mental note, do not have these girls on the same podcast at the same time.
Troubles.
What have I done? Welcome to Screenfish Radio. I'm so glad you could join us this week as we talk about... I'm so glad this week for a couple of reasons. First of all, I'm thrilled to talk about the film Sound of Metal, which is in select theaters now where theaters are open and is coming on Amazon Prime on December the 4th. But I'm also thrilled to have Catherine Erskine back and first-timer Deb Whalen together.
Woo!
Glad to have you both. Thank you so much for coming on. I'm looking forward to this, and I'm really looking forward to your insight on this film. Sound of Metal tells the story of Ruben, a heavy metal drummer who suddenly loses his hearing and is suddenly forced to find out what it means to be a part of the deaf community. Directed and written by Darius Marder, the film stars Riz Ahmed. And as always, this podcast is rated S for spoilers, so I do recommend you've seen the film before you listen to the episode. But ladies, I'm dying to hear. We've already been talking a little bit, but I'm dying to hear what you think of Sound of Metal.
It was okay.
It was
lame.
Oh dear. Yeah, no, I just went straight in with the enthusiasm because I loved it. I super loved it. And that, so I, yeah, now I wish I had made a cool hipster joke as well. But I loved it. I've already played the card. So here we go.
I loved it too. I thought it was fantastic. I enjoyed every minute of it. And I do not know if I have seen a movie with this lead actor in it, but he was brilliant. Like, he really, really did this movie justice. And I feel like he really immersed himself in the community, the deaf community, and took on all the learning that he needed to. That sounds dumb, but it just seemed like he really was passionate about the project. Maybe he's just a really good actor, but he did so well in this film.
Yeah, I agree. When Steve told us which film we'd be watching, you know, I went straight to IMDb. And it was funny because it seems like everyone who knows Riz Ahmed, they know him from something different. And so, Steve, you said that you knew him from Star Wars.
Yeah.
And because he's in one of the newer films. And I recognized him because he was on the Hamilton mixtape.
Stop it. Was he?
I know him as Riz MC. He's a rapper from England. And there's a track on the Hamilton mixtape called Immigrants based off the line that Lafayette and Hamilton, you know, just you know, jam
out. I'm obsessed together. With Hamilton.
So yeah, like the bit where they go immigrants, we get the job done. They built a whole like B-side track around that, and they got Kanon, Riz MC, Snow the Product, and I can't remember the fourth guy. I always forget his name, but he's a Puerto Rican rapper. And so they just rap about their experiences as their immigrant experience, whether it's because they themselves immigrated from somewhere else or they're the children of immigrated parents. And yeah, it's so I was like, and now he's, you know, playing a metal drummer, American, who is, you know, very quickly introduced to the world of deafness and the deaf. So I was pretty impressed just seeing him in that role. I immediately was very intrigued, but and was not disappointed when I saw the film by any stretch of the imagination.
I'm really excited that you finally saw the film. I always feel like I sound snooty when I say this, but I saw this at TIFF. I saw it at TIFF last year, and
pinkies up
in the all the fall way through the film. 19 yeah. Back in, when we could be together.
What are these movie theaters you speak of?
Lovey. No, I saw it at TIFF last year, and I mean, it got some buzz, but it didn't get picked up. It got picked up by Amazon on the week of. It didn't have a deal. People always think that, you know, these festivals, like people are trying to get deals for their films. They're trying to sell mm-hmm. them. So, but when that happens, you're never actually sure when it's going to show up. And then in the beginning of August, I suddenly got the word that it was starting. They were finally starting a rollout for it. And this is one of those films. I honestly find it a very special film. And somehow in 2020, I think it seemed more relevant because, I mean, we continue to talk about sort of a woke culture in more of an in-depth way. But this is a culture that, quite frankly, I know nothing about. I really don't. And I mean, and the most experience I've seen really seeing a deaf character on screen is A Quiet Place, which mm-hmm. has very little to do with deaf culture, although it has a lot to do with being quiet. And I loved the film too. And I thought that was a really smart film, but this one really, like, I had no idea what I was going to see. And I mean, for me, given the place of life that I was at the time when I saw it, like it resonated so loudly with my soul that I've actually been dying to have people share this film. So I'm really interested to hear, because you both have experience with deaf culture in different ways too. So in some ways, I know that I'm going to be learning from both of you throughout this conversation. Because, you know, I have so little, if any, experience, practical experience.
Well, and we're still probably going to be missing a certain perspective because none of us are actually deaf.
Right.
No matter what the immersion or association with the deaf culture, there is going to be that missing element. And so, I mean, I think that's worth naming.
Yes.
I chose to watch the film with a friend who is a trained interpreter who's done like extensive study on deaf culture and advocacy and that kind of thing. And so I chose to watch it with her because I knew I would miss things. You know, my experience with deaf culture is actually quite minimal. My mother is deaf. My dad died when I was younger, but he was hard of hearing. And so I had more association with deaf culture when I was younger, you know, growing up at home and whatnot. I don't have very much access right now. Like, I don't have deaf friends for the most part. And everyone I know who's deaf, I know through my mom. It's really funny because a lot of the sign language I know is very church and like Christianity centric, because that's where I've spoken the most sign language, is, you know, at church growing up. So the bit in the film where, Ruben goes to his first meeting as part of, you know, this deaf collective. And I was able to recognize they were praying the Serenity Prayer.
Yes.
Because I know the sign for God and, you know, grant me peace and serenity. And, you know, like that was very easily identifiable to me. Whereas the conversation around the dinner table that you first see, I was lost. So it's kind of interesting that, you know, how different culture within culture kind of functions.
It's true. And the isolation too of like, you grew up in a home that was led by like a matriarch that was deaf, and you're still kind of out of the community, right? Like you have your mom in that home, but you're not like immersed into a group or like kids who are also CODA and that growing up as well. And you see that a lot.
Mm-hmm. We should probably stop and deconstruct CODA. So why don't you tell us what CODA means?
So the word CODA stands for child of a deaf adult. So that would be deaf, whose mother was deaf.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been told that there's a big deaf community in like down on Church Street. And there's a lot of intersection between, you know, like deaf and queer culture and, you know, the LGBTQ community and whatnot. So it's like right there. I could be there in 5 minutes on foot if it wasn't snowing like crazy, which it is.
It's so true. There's Canada, a very big LGBTQ deaf community. And the deaf community in Toronto, when I got immersed into it, I realized it's so large and yet so small. Everyone knows each other and they're all kind of in the same community. But it's true. If you aren't immersed in learning sign language, or you're not getting that education on the deaf culture and all of the different nuances, it wasn't until I went to school for it that I would start noticing people signing or like noticing people who were deaf in my community. And I was like, this has been here all along. Mm-hmm. Because deaf people are, and hard of hearing, and like deaf with a capital D, we'll say.
There you go.
And they're all in our community and they're all around us. But I feel like because of the hearing culture, are also so isolated. So stay in these small communities. And I really loved seeing that the community that they created in this movie. And it's good to say that, you know what? People have this, and I'm just going to put it out there. People have this image of people who are different or who have a different outlook or language or situation to be just like, oh, this beautiful, nice, kind people who never, like, you know, who are just so great and it's so brave and it's all this. And that's all BS, because people are real and they have real issues like addiction and they have struggles just like everybody else. And people can be nice. People can be jerks. People are just people. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this spoke to that as well. There are so many diverse people in the actual community that it showed just different walks of life and different aspects of that community, which was really exciting.
One of the things that my interpreter friend pointed out that she loved was like the integrated deaf community in this film. So it wasn't just a bunch of like good looking deaf white people.
Yes.
So she pointed out like you had like the deaf and LGBTQ representation. You had deaf like plus other, you know, like conditions going on. So you had like a deaf blind person in there
who was
Ruben's roommate. You also had deaf people of color. And so she was very, very thrilled by that, as was I. But it was something that she particularly mentioned that I made sure to note down, because that's the thing. It's like deaf people don't just look like you. And in this case, like the three of us talking, like we're three white people. So that might not be something that we would think to look for, except that this year, as you know, Steve pointed out, like 2020 has been the year of like, wake up or get out.
Yeah.
Like, the world is not going to wait for us if we do not wake up and like get a move on. So yeah. I mean, even I'm still very much waking up to things like that. So it was really good to just be reminded to be on a lookout for it.
That's one of the things I liked. You know, the film is very much a welcoming into a community that is already established, but he has no idea exists. You know, that actually, that was the thing. I'm thrilled that you ladies are already on it, because that was one thing, you know, to me, it was a healthy representation of community, but I am thrilled to hear that it's a healthy representation of deaf community. Mm-hmm. Because I mean, Darius Marder, from my understanding, and I spoke with him last week, his connection with the deaf community before this was minimal. at best. Like, he was an outsider. Yeah. So, you know, the thing that I saw, like, I connected with it, but I didn't, you always are a little nervous that it's going to reflect the views and biases of the filmmaker that has not been a part of that community, if you understand what I'm saying. So it sounds like it's a pretty healthy representation in your eyes and from what you saw.
Mm-hmm. From the perspective of three hearing people.
Yes.
Agreed.
Yes, with that caveat.
And I think we'll just blanket that. And I can speak to you. You know what was my absolute, like, I want to say favorite part, but there were so many good things.
If
I had to choose, my favorite part was that in A Quiet Place, in all these movies, they're not made for deaf people or inclusive for deaf people. They're made for hearing people who are coming into a deaf space. Mm. And so A Quiet Place, for example, oh, wow, this great deaf main character, and this is going to be so great for the community, did not have any subtitles until they started using sign language, right? So it's not like a deaf person or a deaf people could go and see this movie and, you know, have that accessibility mm-hmm. that they needed. But I loved that, as someone who knows sign language and is grateful that I do know it, they did not use any subtitles for anyone until Ruben started understanding sign language. There was no
subtitling the deaf.
Yeah, until the conversations. He was blind to it. And if you don't know, or maybe deaf to it.
Deaf to it, yeah.
And so were you until he was able to kind of get himself into that situation. And I just absolutely love that, because I'm like, yeah, there's a whole community of people you're going to not know, and it's going to take a while to get into. And I love that. Yes, I understand ASL. So like during those meetings, I would be able to be like, okay, that person's addicted to this. That person's addicted to this. This isn't an NA meeting. But if you don't know sign language, you're just as confused and you're just as uncomfortable as Ruben is until he starts to bleed into that comfortability mm-hmm. and that understanding of language. That was just brilliant to me.
Yeah, I'd agree. I liked that, you know, the subtitles were there right from the beginning and you didn't have the choice to put them on or off. They were just part of the film. That was really important. My husband and I, we keep subtitles on our, like, we have it programmed into Netflix, and, you know,
yes.
We still watch DVDs. And so when we put those on, like, we always set the subtitles up. Because first of all, like, subtitles are really beneficial for a number of reasons. Mm-hmm. Like, my first complaint about any film is that, like, the sound design is, especially with these, like, typical Hollywood movies where you've got, like, explosions and loud music and all this kind of stuff. That stuff is so loud. So you turn your volume down, especially if you live in an apartment and you've got any bass on your sound system. So you turn it down, and then when it comes to a scene with dialogue, you can't hear anything. So the subtitles have really come in handy for us, and we've just sort of made them like a way of life. You know, again, growing up in the house with deaf parents, like, I always had closed captioning on the television. So it's not something that's ever annoyed me. It's something that I've been used to since I was a kid. So seeing that, you know, show up in a film where I didn't have control over, like, the functions and whatnot, that was pretty great. And I noticed that immediately. And also just, you know, like, Ruben being, you know, the sympathetic, identifiable character that the audience is sort of connecting with, because, like, you know, he's the fish out of water.
Yeah.
And he's the one who is, you know, getting introduced by force into this community, doesn't know what to do with it, doesn't want to be there, is desperate to just get everything fixed again, mm-hmm. And to go back to his life as he knew it. But, you know, there's going to be some time passing between now and then if he can pull it off, and he's got to figure it out. He's got to figure out how to communicate. He's got to figure out how to how to grieve the loss of that that part of his life, even if it's temporary, which you don't know, right? You don't know as you're watching the film whether or not he's ever going to be able to access that part of his life. And it's not just his hearing he's trying to access, right? Like his relationship is put into jeopardy. His career is put into jeopardy. His lifestyle on the road as a musician, like all of that stuff is put into jeopardy because of his hearing loss. And so there's a lot for him to grieve. And so, I mean, whether it's deaf culture or not, that's something that absolutely people can identify with, is that when you're going through that kind of a loss, like your whole life goes into a tailspin.
Yeah.
And I really, really appreciated that, that he was someone who was dealing with so much complexity. Like the hearing loss would be enough, but you throw into that, like the addiction issues, mm-hmm. You throw into that the relationship issues, and you saw some codependency in the way that they were, you know, dealing with their relationship, and they were kind of working through some of that dependency stuff. Like it just looked like a really genuine, healthy relationship. But again, like that's thrown into, that's sort of ruptured for him. And to have to deal with all of that and a hearing loss and like a new culture and a new way of communicating, I just thought they dealt with that so, so, so well.
Can we talk a little bit about, you mentioned the word fix. And I would love to talk about the word fix in this movie, because it's specifically mentioned. And first of all, I realize the irony and the struggle I'm having with the fact that it's an audio only podcast as we talk about.
That's what I was going to say. It's not very accessible, no. This podcast. But.
I would use the video and have closed captioning. I have no idea how to do it. But it made me want to, like, I'm not deaf to that. Oh, sorry. Not blind to that?
Ignorant to it?
Ignorant, thank you.
You're aware.
I'm aware of that. Thank you very much. Wow, man, even language.
Language is huge.
But the idea of fixing, I think, is really, really interesting here. And I do want to say to Deb, you've talked about the sound design. I think the sound design in this film
so important.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Well, it's intentional, brilliant. Right? There's no way that you can look at this and go, oh, wow, what a coincidence.
No, exactly it is. And because it's not just even about the ASL, there's more. There's the cochlear mm-hmm. implant or whatever, and it talks like this, and the audio goes off. Mm-hmm. And Martyr actually said the film is entirely through his perspective. Through Ruben's perspective. So I think the sound design in a film like this is just incredible. But I want to know from the two of you what you think it means to be fixed in this particular film.
What it means to be fixed,
I think the two questions are sort of linked together.
There's a lot to say about that.
Yeah, I'm like, that's a huge topic, especially in the deaf community. Like, I was thinking, there's a huge debate, and there's a huge separation in the deaf community about fixing, right? Like, you're not deaf enough if you use hearing aids, or, you know, cochlear implants, CIs, are a huge, huge debate, because not only are they extremely invasive, they rarely work to the best that you want them to, because if you notice
they never work.
Yeah.
They never work. They do not do what hearing people want them to do.
No. And that was good perspective to show as well, because he thought, oh, it's going to cure my thing. But the cochlear implant actually takes sound. And I loved what she said, that it's tricking your brain into thinking you're hearing. You're not hearing.
Yeah, and your ears still don't work.
No. And the risk factors of getting a cochlear implant, like, you can have total face paralysis, you can have infections. Parents who get cochlear implants or CIs in their children are often judged, because, like, you need to let them decide. And hearing aids are not cheap. They're thousands and thousands of dollars. And I know several people in the community who either I used to actually be in a relationship with a deaf person, and he hated his hearing aids. He would never use them unless he had
cochlear implants or hearing
aids? He only had hearing aids.
Okay.
But he grew up in an oral country and an oral family. So He never used them. He just took them off immediately. And that's the thing. Kids are flushing these, these fixes because they're causing them more stress, more agitation, and just a separation of not knowing who they are. So fixing in the deaf community is a huge debate, mm-hmm. and one that is very passionate for some people. Mm-hmm. And I Absolutely. Loved seeing that operation. I love seeing, like, you think as a hearing person, oh, we'll just get a cochlear implant, we'll get a CI for the kid and they'll be fine. They're drilling into the skull. They're going into that. And
you saw Ruben's scars, right?
Like, yeah.
Afterwards, because they obviously have to shave around it to get in there. Like, those scars were so noticeable that he walked around with a hat, like, so much of the time afterwards. Like, they're such noticeable, like, huge scars. So the invasiveness of the surgery alone, right?
And it's so devastating too, because people think it is a fix all. People are like, that's it. I'm going to pay $80,000. I'm going to be fixed. And then when they're not, mm-hmm. it's another loss and it's another thing. So, I mean, because it's so across the board in the deaf community, I feel like I can't really speak to it. But I think for Ruben, fixing was just accepting. I guess he needed to accept. It wasn't like what I'm so bad with names, but the character who is in charge of the house,
Joe,
mm-hmm. he was like, we're not here to fix your hearing. We're here to fix your mindset.
Yep.
And that is a massive thing for people who lose their hearing, because I watched this movie by myself, but I also watched it with, like, noise canceling headphones on. And it was almost like a 4D, 3D experience, because wow. there were times where I was like, is my headphone not working? Then I'd have to remind myself, mm-hmm. and to hear that distortion is so true. But I think, like, would I be this scared if I went deaf now, knowing ASL and knowing what I need to know? And I'm like, but then you don't hear your family anymore. You don't hear, you know, those voices, that music that you love so much. So it is a terrifying prospect to him. But yeah, the fixing in this movie is not about, I think he finds it in the end. It's just being still and just accepting, you know what, I'm going to be okay without this.
I'm not entirely sure he has.
I'm not either. And this is one of the endings that I hate, but I loved in this movie, because it was like, I want an ending. I want a nice, clean, like, and I don't know if he accepts the fact that he's lost his hearing or that his relationship is over or any of those things. I just think he finds that it's okay to be silent, because it's better than being desperate to get even the most garbled hearing. Mm-hmm. And he takes it off, and I want the ending to be like, he goes back to the ranch, or he, like, you know, like,
and he falls in love with a teacher and they have lots of children. And
and that's Hollywood making me feel like that. But I actually felt really good about this ending and that finding that fixing, because who knows, but I think he's going to be okay.
Yeah. I think that's a different comment. I think he's going to be okay.
Yeah. But I don't think he's fixed.
Man,
the journey is about to continue.
Yeah.
That's where it ends.
Without his community. That's the thing that gets me, right? Is
it? Is he without his community?
Well, Joe has asked him to leave. Joe has said that he has broken the trust.
Well, I think he's being asked to leave because he's pursuing his hearing again, right? He's refusing to accept being deaf. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if he were to, you know, just keep his processors off. And I'll want to go into that in terms of just talking, like, breaking down cochlear implants and all they entail. But, like, if he were to keep his processors off, those external pieces of the cochlear function, like, he is essentially still deaf. So, like, if he were to go back and say, I get what you were trying to say to me before, I didn't then, can we talk about me reentering this community? Right now that his values have shifted, mm-hmm. I'd be very surprised if Joe wouldn't be open to that, if the community wouldn't be open to discussing.
And he would be a good teacher to others who were struggling with the same thing he went through when they come into the community too, mm-hmm. right? Like,
yeah, he had nothing but empathy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he'd be a really good teacher.
I love the role of Joe in this film. I think he is, Riz's performance is better if I were to hold them up against each other, but I think Joe is more important to the story in some ways to help keep the narrative grounded, from in a safer place. And I would like to think that he would too. I mean, the way that you describe it there, I think it makes sense. And I love, you know, that when he, when Joe talks about fixing, it's all in the head. It has nothing, mm-hmm. you know, he talks, or what does he do? It's not about fixing here.
It's not about fixing this. It's not, he points to his ear. It's not about fixing this. And then he points to his head. It's about fixing this.
Fixing this. That's right. So.
And he's very Jedi.
Pardon?
It was very Jedi.
It's true. And there's something so holistic about this mm-hmm. that I think is so, so wonderful. And you see that in Ruben's story. And then when the opportunity arises for him to get the implants again, what is the moment that shifts him? Is it, oh, it's when he sees her perform in Paris.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. He hacks into the outside world to track down, you know, the girlfriend and sees that she's continuing to live the life that they, you know, once lived together. And he's like, I can't miss out on that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, which is, and that's named right at the beginning of him arriving there, right? It's like, you need to cut yourself off from your outside life for a while you adjust to this, because it's just too much to deal with, right? There's too much conflict between the old life and your potential life and the life you have now. And, you know, and I think that's really wise when it comes to addiction stuff, when it comes to transition of like a new mm-hmm. experience and, you know, such as becoming deaf. And I think there's a lot of wisdom in that. And, you know, but it's difficult. It's not to say that it's an easy thing to do, is to just give space to your old world that you miss so much, and your outside life. And yeah, I mean, he decides to break those rules and it makes things more complicated for him.
Well, this is going back a little bit to Joe here. I think this fits in with the conversation we're talking about right now. The line that was the absolute sucker punch, and anybody that's listened to our interviews with Darius or anything so far would have heard this, but the line that was the absolute sucker punch to me was when he calls him out for his times in the room in the morning. And I want to make sure I get the quote right, so bear with me for a second. He says, "Although all these mornings you've been sitting in my study, have you had any moments of stillness? Those moments of stillness, that place, that's the kingdom of God, and that place will never abandon you." I was wondering from both of you what you see as the difference between stillness and silence.
I can connect, I guess, with him in that sense. Like, if you told me to go 10 years ago or whatever, even now, and sit in a room and be silent, excuse my throat. I'll just start using ASL for the rest of this podcast.
There you go. I'll interpret.
So if you had put me in a room and just said, you have to be quiet, I would have gone insane. Like, I would have found everything I could do. Like, even when he was crushing that donut and putting it back together again.
So relatable.
It's so relatable. Like, yelling, or the way he was writing, like, it's quiet. Yes. But he's not still. Even his writing was so aggressive and so, fast and focused that he missed that stillness. So him sitting in there was uncomfortable for me. I was like, I almost wanted to check my phone or like something while he was doing that. But there's definitely, you can find silence, not very often in today's world if you're a hearing person, but you can go and, but still be running. Your head, your mind, your thoughts are still going, and those distractions. Oh, is that a crack in the window? What's happening? Who's doing that outside? But there's a huge difference between, for me, for silence and stillness. And there was a point in the end of the movie where maybe it was just a trick of my mind or something that I wanted to hear. But when he was in that room and he was quiet and doing all of those things, he was very tense. He was very tight. But there was a moment at the end of the movie where he took off his CI
processors. Yeah.
Processors. Thank you. And I swear I saw his shoulders just mm-hmm. relax. And that to me is stillness, when even your body is in tune with your, like, if you see me sitting silently, I'm still going to be tense because I'm thinking about 1,000 things. But if you want silence, you're just going to see that subtle, that acceptance and that relaxation of the body. And that was big for me, seeing him kind of unclench, for lack of a better word. Mm-hmm. That to me is stillness.
And I think, yeah, there's so much that you said that I want to respond to. That's the,
like, sorry, I'm a babbler.
No. That's how we talk, right?
Close captioning this would be extremely difficult.
This episode will be out in 8 months.
So, I mean, the first thing that I want to respond to is, so deaf people do not hear. It doesn't mean they are silent.
It's true. They can be some of the loudest people.
I went on a canoe trip with a group of deaf people. There were maybe 10 of us, and I was one of two hearing people. And man, when deaf people are being rowdy in a tent at night in Algonquin Park, like they're, you know, like playing pranks on each other and they're screaming at each other and all that kind of stuff, and they don't know the noise that they're making. It's quite an experience. Very, very interesting. So being silent and not hearing anything, like those are two different things too, right? So that was a very interesting kind of thing to think about. But also, Catherine, you mentioned the tension in Ruben, in his mind, in his body. Like, yeah, absolutely. It was very much all there. And in that last scene, when you see the tension leave him, I think it's important to remember, like, it's not a transcendent moment that, you know, takes him to another place where he's now so much, you know, like he's enlightened and all these kinds of things. Like, those moments of enlightenment are momentary, and we have to work to access them over and over again throughout our lives. And so and not that I heard you saying this, Catherine, but like, I think some people might watch that and go, oh, he gets it now, he's arrived. I think that's a mistake. No. I think that is the moment where we realize, okay, he has a glimpse of it. He understands now. He will continue to process through that. Maybe he will have some easier moments.
Yeah.
Maybe that perspective will grow and he will become more comfortable. He will access that state of stillness more easily when he needs to. I don't think that we can live in that place of, you know, relaxation and rest and whatnot. Like, we do need tension in our lives. It's a fact of life. Anything that we work towards or want to get through, or like, we're not always in control of what happens to us. And so that will create tension too. But this kingdom of God moment that you were talking about, Steve, right? Like, being able to access that place within yourself when you need it is very, very important, because of the things that are out of our control, or even the things that we cause ourselves by bad choices or good choices that went wrong and didn't lead where we thought they might. And being able to go there when we need to is important. So we have to find that place. We need to figure out how we got there so we can get back to it. And then just deal with the tension in between those visits to that still place. That's life. That's a life lesson that we get to see in Ruben if we haven't learned it ourselves, or if we need reminding of it.
Yeah.
That alone. Like, you can't, nobody can teach you that stillness, because he was in a place of happiness and still and around people who from all different walks of life, but he was addicted to so many things. He was addicted to his music. He was addicted to his relationship. They even asked him, how did you get sober? 4 years ago. When did you start dating this girl? 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. He was addicted to her, and he was addicted to the sound and needing that input. And you're right. At the end, I don't think it's him like, all right, I'm ethereal now. I understand. It's just that you can see he knows how to unclench for a second, and it's not going to kill him.
When this film came out, I'm not sure how much I'm going to say here. When I saw this film, I obviously cannot relate to that experience. I cannot. But
being still?
No, the being still. Yeah, that's right. Just another duck on the pond, you know.
Just keep swimming.
But I mean, when this film, I'd mentioned before, I saw it at TIFF last year, which would be September 2019. But the truth is, I was in the midst of one of the darkest moments of my life. Mm-hmm. I would say the 2 years prior to that were, you know, I had basically had a complete psychological nervous breakdown. No biggie. So much so that I had to leave my job and request that they actually, you know, help pay me because I couldn't work. Mm. And so I was entering a time in my life coming out of my own sense of trauma. I won't get into how dark things truly got because it's not relevant to this podcast, but I was entering into a space that for the next 4 months, I was basically, you know, both my kids were in school. Jossie was in school for the first time. So I had a kid in kindergarten. My wife was working 4 days a week, and I basically entered into a space where I had to sit in a room by myself for 4 months. Obviously not entirely. They were home for dinner and whatnot, but for most of the week was by myself. And my head was shrieking. So I could totally relate to him being in that room. And the idea of sitting in stillness, even after I saw the film, was terrifying. But there is something that healing, I really think healing begins to take place when you can do that, when you have the courage to enter into that space. And he struggles with that the entire film, but it is I think Kat, you bringing it up at that ending there is entirely relevant. It doesn't end Deb saying he hasn't got it. Well, by the end, when he actually sits in that space and it's like, I'm going to turn the noise off for a while. That's a revelation for him based on his experience with Joe and in this community. It's not just about turning off the noise for a while. It's about so much more than that. And even if it's a temporary moment, hopefully it leads to more of those temporary moments. You know, so that's a process I can relate to because I had to sit in that stillness and I had to sit in the silence and find that stillness. And that's, I've seen lots of films and I've seen films about religion and I've seen crappy faith-based films. I've never heard them reference the kingdom of God, and I've never heard them reference it so fully as they did in that one throwaway line. And it's very specifically an irreligious place in that sense. Like he says, look, you know, the church, he says the church, religion plays no part in this. The church helps people in need, not just religious people. But I mean, I'm not trying to preach there, but I'm just saying like there was something deeply spiritual about that conversation that struck me. And so though I couldn't relate to the Ruben's journey with the hearing loss, I could definitely relate in that moment and that conversation. Cause I think that you're both absolutely right. Like I think there's something in that space where the mind can, like you, I think you said unclench, Kat, and that you can start to see a light and it sounds so cliche at the end of the tunnel, but in those moments, you don't see that light. You're just existing until you can experience those things.
And you may clench back up again, like what Deb was saying, right? Like that's why I love that ending. Like you may clench back up again and fight again, but like maybe your fight lasts a little shorter each time. And that allowing yourself to unclench once in a while, it's a brave thing to do and it's important.
Well, and I think there's so much, like when we talk about trauma, you know, which like Steve, you mentioned you've experienced, and I'm sure we've all experienced, and you know, those who are present in this conversation and people who are listening and Ruben, obviously, right? Like we will all experience trauma and accepting what has happened to us, accepting the consequences of the trauma, whether or not it's our fault, accepting or resisting. Those are our two choices. And acceptance is very, very, very difficult. And we spend so much time resisting reality. We spend time resisting, you know, our consequences, like all the things that come as a result of trauma and the things that have traumatized us and the world that we live in. And so just watching Ruben in that room, watching Ruben try to busy himself, you know, Joe calls him out for trying to fix the roof and you think he's fixing a roof. He's not doing anything bad. Of all the ways that he could be like, you know, trying to distract himself. Like he's just fixing a roof. Like he's putting his pent up energy to good use. But like Joe is not letting him get away with his resistance to the stillness and his resistance to what is happening to him. Like, he needs to learn to accept it, even for moments at a time. And that's some of the most difficult stuff that we will face in our lives, is just accepting the things that have happened and that we're dealing with. It's very, very difficult. And that's why we end up smashing donuts and screaming into the corner, or like losing our minds, you know, spending hours and hours on our phone. Like, you want to talk about resistance or acceptance? Like, look at, we have all had the opportunity to deal with that during COVID, the pandemic, the amount of time we've had to spend at home against our will. In some cases, there are some people who have accepted life at home beautifully, right? Introverts are glorying around the world. There's been a lot of things. Like, it's interesting watching this film during the pandemic, because there are lots of things that we feel forced to have to deal with. Mm-hmm. So if you can't relate to Ruben in any other way, there's at least that. Right now that we've all been through the pandemic, you can watch this film and relate in that way. But yeah, acceptance and resistance, like ebb and flow, like you'll always be dealing with those things.
And what you hold on to, too, as well. It's interesting you say the pandemic. This film has nothing to do with the pandemic, and it has everything to do with the pandemic. Like, it's interesting. Like, we enter into it. We've entered into this space, which is not just a cultural-wide trauma. I think it's...
Absolutely, it is.
I think we can use that word.
It's a global trauma.
A global trauma. And it will be a different place when it's over. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I know when we first started this thing, I thought it's going to be 3 weeks. It's a nice vacation. That's fine. And then you hear, okay, it's going to be a few months. And then you're hearing things like it could be 2 years. Mm-hmm. But then what are people fighting to get back to? We're fighting to get back to the way things were, which is highly relatable to this film. You know, rather than embracing the fact that, okay, what we're going through and what we've been through sucks, mm-hmm. but we're coming out on the other side with something new and different. And what are we going to try and do? Fight for what we had, or try and embrace this sort of new fleshed out version of those things? I think at one point, I forget who it is that says that, but I forget who it is. Somebody says, it's so disconcerting the things that your mind holds on to without you knowing. Which I think is totally relevant.
And I think too, it's like awesome. Like, that thing, like what we hold on to and what we don't. Like, there's so many dumb things. Like, how many times in this pandemic have I Marie Kondo'd or home edited my house, you know, or like watched hours of Netflix, or, you know, really done anything to just avoid the silence? Because I don't do well with silence. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you can tell or the listeners can tell, I'm kind of a chatterbox. So there's only so much talking to the cat that you can do. But yeah, like, it's amazing what you hold on to. And I was just thinking of like the fear of the unknown. Like, it speaks to the pandemic. Like, mm-hmm. we don't know. Why are you so desperate to get back to the mall? The mall sucks. Mm-hmm. Like, but it's just that you can go and wander around the mall because that's what you used to do. And like, you know, all of that stuff. But like, I think this speaks to Ruben too. Like, his fear of the unknown. Like, all he knows is music and all he knows is hearing. And there's so much more to it than that, but needing to be able to perform is needing your identity. And for so many people, their identities are wrapped up in obviously who they are, but it stops them from acknowledging that their personality, his personality may never, like, will never change. He teaches those kids how to play drums, right? Mm-hmm. So music can still be in your life. Yes, it's going to be different, just like in the pandemic. Yes, it's going to be different, but it's being able to see that and to release that fear and maybe challenge yourself in a different way. And no one has the energy to challenge themselves when they're going through a trauma, but I feel like it's just like that fear of the unknown. And having the headphones on, let me tell you, like, the intensity of that silence in the film, and you guys are talking about the sounding and all of that stuff, but it was so immersive that it was almost like it brought stress to me for Ruben, or like through Ruben. Like, his ability to have that fear of the unknown was also kind of like becoming a fear for me and being still in that. But you're right. Like, things will never be the same. It's about finding who you are in the difference. And I saw glimmers of that.
I think it's really important. Like, we're talking about, you know, in the scope of the pandemic and our experience of the pandemic, this idea of going back to normal, going back to what we had. And like, that's Ruben's journey, right? Mm-hmm. He's desperate to get back to what he had. And I've got my notebook with all the notes that I took during the film. Catherine, when you were talking about like the stress and the frustration of like experiencing with Ruben's, you know, with Ruben, these moments of silence, I found this note where I wrote in really big letters, stress. And it was specifically around the activation scene, right? This might be a good time to talk about how cochlear implants work for those who don't know. So basically you get a surgery is like they cut open your skull, and they go into the part of the brain that, you know, deals with your hearing and receives that information. And so what they do is they basically like eradicate the rest of your cochlea. And so it's interesting, to get cochlear implants, you are getting rid of the last of your natural hearing. So there's like, so when we talk about fixing, right, cochlear implants do not fix your hearing. They give you another means of, you know, dealing with hearing and sound and all of that kind of stuff, but it does not give you your natural hearing back. So it eradicates the cochlea, and, you know, they put a chip in there. They heal you back up, so you don't have your hearing yet. The chip is not enough. That's just one part. The invasive surgery and the chip is the first part. And then there is a device that you sort of hook onto your ear, and then there's that part attaches to a wire that has another device on the end of it. And that, through magnets, sort of attaches to the chip through your skull. So you have this magnetic thing that sort of clicks on. And that is the sound receiver. And so that communicates, you know, through this, like the outside device communicates to the chip in your brain and sends all the sound signal. So it's like the doctor said, you know, your brain is being tricked into thinking that you're hearing these things. And for someone who is born deaf and gets a cochlear implant for whatever reason, almost no deaf person chooses that, apparently. This is their first experience of hearing. And so they don't know the difference between what a hearing person experiences as hearing and this cochlear implant hearing. For someone who is hearing, goes through hearing loss, and then gets a cochlear implant, they know the difference. It is a very stark difference. And they did such a good job of showing you what a cochlear implant allows you to quote unquote hear. And I was really worried. One of the reasons I was so stressed in that activation scene when work on the signals and all that kind of stuff and try to get his hearing quote unquote back to normal. It was stressful for me because I wanted to know what it was going to hear like, or what it was going to sound like, what he was going to hear. I was so worried that they were just going to make everything sound normal again.
Yeah, me too.
I think by that point, I had started to trust the direction and the production enough that they probably wouldn't, but there was a part of me that was like, no, that like it's very possible that, because it's hearing people who put this thing on, right?
Right.
And so, but they did such a good job of honoring what that actually, you know, sounds like, quote unquote. But just that idea of, this is what Ruben thinks his moment of restoration is. He thinks that he's going to have this thing restored back to him, mm-hmm. and then he can get back to his life. I'm really hoping that the doctor explaining to him that, you know, how the process works and that he's not actually hearing again, he's just, his brain is accessing sound a different way. I really hope that wasn't the first time she explained that to him, because to take all of his money, you know, go through all of this traumatic invasive surgery and then explain it. Like, I'm hoping he just didn't, you know, like he just didn't receive that information the first couple of times, because I miss things all the time when people are telling me important things.
And I think there's the hope that overtakes that. Like, you see those moms or those families that post on Instagram or like post on Facebook, like, baby here's for the first time. And like, it's so annoying because right? It's so amazing because it's like, it's a miracle, modern science. Like, the baby's excited, but guess what? The baby's hearing like what Ruben heard. Like, you're not thinking that this is going to, like, people need to be highly aware that this isn't like a fix-all. And I think the movie really spoke well to that, because as they were clicking through the channels on the cochlear implant, I'm like, please don't hit like a perfect hearing, because that's what I feel like pushes parents to do that. And like you said, people who are born deaf, they don't choose that. It's usually a hearing parent who sends them for a invasive surgery to, in with the best interest at heart, but not understanding that your baby's hearing you, but not like what you think. And where is that for the best or not for the best? I don't judge anyone's choices. I'm just saying, like, it really, I agree with you. It really did show that. It's not your hearing, your ear is not hearing, your synapses are firing and sending a message to the hearing part of your brain.
And it may work well enough, like your brain may be able to process sound without your ears well enough to know that, like, to be able to have a conversation with someone who doesn't speak sign language, you can figure out that that sound in the distance is a church bell, as annoying as it is. People with hearing who have to deal with church bells, like, a lot of us would choose to shut off our hearing too, having to deal with that sometimes. So yeah, I mean, there's that experience, like, where you have, like, you can understand the information, but if you know what it's supposed to sound like, you know that this is a facsimile of hearing. This is an interpretation of the sound. It is not the sound that you're hearing. Very, very interesting. That, like, I commend them. I cannot commend them for displaying that experience so truthfully and so honestly and realistically.
Are there more things you want to discuss specifically, or should I start to wrap up?
So, I would say there's one, at least one more thing that we should spend some time talking about. We kind of touched on it earlier about representation. There will be discussion, among people who see this film, about why they didn't choose a deaf actor, or a hard of hearing actor to play Ruben. I'm on the fence about it. I think that a hearing person such as, who's going to call him Riz MC again, Riz Ahmed, he very much immersed himself in the experience. And I thought he portrayed it realistically. Like, I felt like I identified, I would have absolutely responded in a lot of ways, in many ways, most ways even, to, like, the way that he did to hearing loss. But my interpreter friend, right, the one who is actually trained in deaf advocacy as a hearing person, she insisted that there were people from the deaf community who could have played that role, and the advocacy and representation could have been done better. But I know other interpreters who, like, said, who have said things like, you know, there are reasons to choose more commercial actors for roles like this, because even just getting their help in drawing attention to the cause, so to speak, can be very helpful. And because they chose deaf representation in other ways in the film, they were obviously not ignorant about those choices. Even, is it Paul Racy, Roche, plays Joe, Paul Racy. He is a CODA, so he's a child of deaf adults, and he is a court-certified interpreter. So he knows the deaf experience very, very well. And then, of course, you had all of these, you had these deaf actors, some of whom are well-known in the film. So it was obviously a thoughtful choice But I know that the verdict is still out for a lot of people as to whether or not Riz Ahmed was the best choice for, you know, a character who suffered hearing loss. I don't know what you guys think about that.
I could see the debate, because I think any, and I don't know why it just stuck in my mind, but there's another movie that's getting trashed because of representation right now. But I could see it from either side. I feel like this actor, and I did watch a snippet of an interview somewhere with them about how immersed they were in the deaf community and how much, not advice, but like, how do you say when like someone comes on into your set and is basically telling you what to do and what not to do. They reached out to the deaf community. They were very active in making sure that their representation was a respectful and positive one and a diverse one. So I feel like they did the footwork. They did the work that they needed to do. And I feel like he was very much like just the feeling and the stress that came off of him and the ability to portray what a fully hearing person goes through in that moment was so good. I know that they had the same discussion about the movie 6 feet apart or 5 feet apart about the people who are going through CF, and the actors didn't have CF, but they had a girl who actually passed from CF. They're advising.
I don't know what CF is.
Cystic fibrosis.
Okay.
And they even had someone on set that was like, you know, the patch with cystic fibrosis, the patch that you have on their chest, it should look like this and not this. So having that advocacy on set and taking that was huge for that movie as well as this movie. So I understand that it would be back and forth. I don't know what the difference would be as a hearing person, but I really felt like they respected the community in this. Mm-hmm. There's a movie coming out. This is rambling. You can cut this out with Sia. Sia created a movie about a nonverbal autistic girl, and she cast Maddie Zellinger, who is like the girl who's in all her music videos.
Oh, the dancing
and
they're, girl. Yeah.
Yeah, the dance. And there is huge backlash on her not using any kind of advisor or using an actress that was autistic and was mute at the same time. So I think in many films there is a lot of controversy, but I feel like in this film, and I'm no expert, but from what I've heard and what I've seen, they really wanted to respect that community and bring them in and take that direction from them. So I hope that people are able to see that in their choice, not to say if it's good or bad.
I would say this too. First of all, I think the representation, the conversations around representation in the last couple of years are essential. I think we need to have that, you know, with, you don't want Scarlett Johansson playing an Asian woman and all this stuff like this. Like, yeah, like this is,
and yes, they do.
No, but in all seriousness, my argument for this film in specifically, first of all, I'm thrilled they didn't take a white blonde middle-aged man or something like that. They took somebody, showed some representation in that way. I would say that this is the story about a person who hears being brought into the deaf community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that that is relevant. Mm-hmm. In this case, I think that, yes, I understand the conversations. You've already talked about the representation surrounding him. They did an excellent job with that. This is the journey of a hearing man in a world he doesn't understand. So in that sense, in terms of representation, it doesn't faze me in the least. Because this is not a story from the perspective of the deaf community. This is a story in the perspective of a person in the hearing community, outside that community, learning to be a part of it, which they were. Riz Ahmed was. Riz Ahmed is, Darius Martyr is. This is as much about their learning as it is about the character's journey. So in my mind, in terms of representation, because they've been sensitive in so many other areas, this is a story about somebody who is experiencing that. Mm-hmm.
I think the question from the other side is, this is another hearing person who gets a role in a movie when
right.
it deals with the deaf community. And is there someone from the deaf community, either hard of hearing or even another child of a deaf adult, right? Another CODA who right. could have played the role. Like, could we have included someone from that real life community in the film to represent the role? So again, I'm divided about it. I don't think that Riz Ahmed was the wrong choice. I think he honored the role. I think he honored the community very well. He learned American Sign Language.
Yes, he did.
Literally immersed himself for a year learning that language. And he had, there were, I don't know if it was headphones or just like earpieces that they actually fashioned to block his hearing in certain situations so that he was literally experiencing it. So whether or not he was the right choice in the grand scheme of things, yeah, their work to honor the experience and to make it as genuine as possible, I mean, no one can deny that they did a lot of work there. So yeah, I just don't know what the answer is as to whether or not they should have, you know, chosen someone from the deaf community, but it is a genuine argument.
Yeah. Yeah.
We have the even ability to answer that because we are not from the mm-hmm. community. So mm-hmm. I think that's a question for people to think about and maybe talk to people that they know who are hard of hearing or who are deaf and open that discussion about mm-hmm. that.
And that's the point, right? That we're thinking about and talking about these things. That is the point, because one, like 5 years ago, you know, not as many people would have been discussing that element of the movie. 10 years ago, no, not a chance, yeah. right? Our ableism and our, you know, our fortune and our privilege is becoming more and more aware to us. And we're thankfully making better choices as a result of that awareness or wokeness, as the kids say. I just aged myself.
You're so hip and cool.
When I try to be.
I just want to know why this isn't more widespread. Like, why is this movie not in more theaters? Why are we not having it on the big screen?
Because there's no big screens. And it is widespread. It is in theaters.
It's in theaters, like it's an actual real, not just the one downtown behind the weird corner store, like it's an actual real theater.
Well, no, that's different. It's a special, it would be considered specialty cinema because it's an indie film. Like that's right. the reality of it. Like,
I want to see more of these. I want them, I don't necessarily want a part two because I think they were so brilliant and they ended in a way that both made me happy and angered me in...
Just like
the Hollywood need of a nice little bow.
You want to see the price of metal on screen.
Yeah. As it fluctuates on. Yeah, right. But it was, yeah.
Riz Ahmed
representing the Dow Jones. The
follow up. He's,
I just want to sit down with Riz and like have a conversation. So if you could make that happen,
that'd be great.
Sure. He's a big fan of this podcast. Calls me all the time.
All the time.
Listen, Steve, I'm challenging you.
What,
you can
number what?
Yeah, give me his number. You can get editing software for closed captioning. It is accessible to you, and I'd be happy to help with the work of closed captioning.
Okay, or there's free. Your offer.
Well, I will. I'll look into it because here's the thing: is that I'm exploring YouTube more. So this is an audio podcast. It always has been, but I'm exploring YouTube more. Mm-hmm. You show me that, I will air this episode with closed captioning on YouTube.
I know that there's companies too that are deaf owned companies for closed captioning that you can send the feed to and they'll put all the closed captioning together.
You tell me, you help me find that place.
I'll look into that for you.
I'm serious. You help me find that place. And
I am too. I'll look into it for you. It's all about inclusivity. This is a movie about accessibility. Why am I signing the word accessibility?
Because immersion.
Yeah. We're going to immerse ourselves into this. But yeah, it is about accessibility. And I feel like your audience, I mean, who wouldn't want to see these three faces with me walking away to get my computer charger.
That's right.
And using that face that says, can they hear my stomach gurgles?
There should be a thought bubble above me.
wondering if they can hear my stomach gurgles.
It's amazing. I want to see movies, more movies like this. I want to see the lack of closed captioning for hearing people so that they feel that confusion that he felt in those meetings, that they feel the uncomfortableness and awkwardness. And I want less movies that are said to be for the deaf community, such as A Quiet Place, with captions for everything except the hearing parts. And I want to see more of this actual inclusion. So I'm excited to see what they'll come up with next. Maybe not these guys, but I mean, he wasn't hard to look at either through the movie. So
let's be real. No, but I think what you're saying is important. And I don't think it's any one person's responsibility to make things, you know, more immersive or inclusive or whatever. Like if you're making a film or producing a podcast talking about that film, like, I think the fact that we are aware that there is more we can do, there are people who are excluded from these conversations and these stories that need to be included. Yeah. And us asking whose voices, whose attention is missing, you know, who are we excluding in what we do? And is there anything we can do about that? Because most of the time the case is yes. And so just exploring more stories that we could be telling, right? Yeah. The way that Darius Martyr and his brother did, like in this film. And in, you know, like I am very excited about what the next few years hold, because we are waking up. We are talking to each other more. We are reaching out more across more divides. We're standing up for each other better. And there's so much work left to be done. Like by no means do I think we've reached utopia, but I think that we are waking up in a way. Like, I don't remember thinking about any of these things in the 90s when I was in high school. Dated. No. And, I'm so glad. I'm so glad that the awareness is there, that we are waking up. And, yeah, so I think that more podcasts are going to be on YouTube with visual captioning. And I think more stories are going to be better told in the cinema. It's I think the future's bright. Mm-hmm.
Well, ladies, with that being said, it seems kind of obvious, but let's screen it or skip it. Sound of Metal, screen it or skip it?
Screen it over and over, over and over.
Screen it with people and have a discussion. Mm.
Or at least over Zoom, because it's a pandemic and you're not.
No. Just invite 50 to 100 of your closest friends into your living room.
That's right.
Yeah, Zoom. It's also for rent. I rented it off of the TIFF Lightbox website that you suggested, and it was great. It was only like $14.
And in a couple of weeks, people will be able to access it on Amazon Prime. Right?
You better believe I'll be watching it again with people.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Yeah, this is one of those films that I not only think that I want to, well, I mean, I've seen it twice now, but I mean, I see it a third time and I want to show it to others. Mm-hmm. I was so thrilled that you both came on, because I love speaking to you both. That's obvious. But I mean, because I wanted you to see this film. I wanted other people to tell me what they thought about this film. And it had to be all good.
It was a horrible movie. I couldn't understand anything that was happening. It was too quiet.
Why were they talking with their hands so much?
I thought this movie was all about the financial district. I didn't hear one conversation about the price of metal. It's so weird.
I thought it was just going to be a ting 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 sound.
Yeah.
Also,
the one thing I did like.
My favorite game show is The Sound is Right. That's my favorite one.
The one thing I really liked about this movie, to go back to one thing I forgot I wanted to say, is how quickly it went into his issue with hearing. Like, it was basically right from the start.
Yeah.
Where I thought it was going to be this, la, 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 oh no, I've lost my hearing, I'll go to this place, and for the last 20 minutes, I'll learn to accept my life as a deaf person. Like, you know, like, I thought it was going to be hearing all throughout, and then whatever, but no, it went right into it. And that was really good.
They sure did.
Just like you should go right into watching another episode of Screenfish Online with closed captioning for your convenience.
Once you show me how I can do that. I'm throwing it right back for the help. Anyway, ladies, thank you so, so much. This is a joy, and I hope we can do it again.
Likewise.
Really appreciate it. For you at home, a reminder that you can find us wherever podcasts are available, I hope, or at least intended to be. We're all over the place. Apple Podcasts and Spotify, Amazon Podcasts, Google Play doesn't exist anymore. Anywhere, all those good things. If you go to the podcast page, screenfish.net, at screenfish.net, you can download Fishing for More, small group questions that you can have with people that you see the film with or have seen it as well. We will be back next week. We had a bit of a bump there where we missed some spots due to some scheduling issues. We will be back next year.
Next year.
But anyway, ladies, thank you again. I appreciate it. And for you at home, we started the conversation. This was Screenfish.